In college basketball, you never know what will happen, but one thing is for certain, that the more hoops you get, the better chance you have of winning. And Greg Peterson, the man whose nickname is Hoops, knows all about it. From the blue bloods to the afterthoughts, Greg breaks down every game, every team, every day. So now it is time for Hooping with Hoops.
Hello, welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Hooping with Hoops. Myself, Greg Hoops Peters, and we've got a terrific podcast for you. As in the second segment, we are going to be joined by one of our good buddies, Eli Becker, the founder of HeatCheck CBB. It certainly has been interesting to see everything that has been happening with some of these teams setting up their own bubbles when it comes to multi-team events, things like this. So we're going to get his take on all of it. As we know, a couple days ago, the entire college basketball world received some very interesting news when it comes to what is all going on with Wichita State and Greg Marshall facing allegations of hitting players, racial slurs, list goes on and on. It's just a whole bunch of not good stuff, and I think that I'm putting it as politely and tamely as possible. So we're going to be talking about that and so much more with Eli. Always great to get him on the podcast. And then in the final segment, I'm going to be giving you guys a recap of all that we've seen from college basketball over the last 48 hours. Typically, it's the last 24 hours, but today it's the last 48 because I did my preview of the Big East Conference for the upcoming season on this podcast yesterday. As you guys know, I'm doing a preview of every single one of these conferences on this podcast. And when it comes to this podcast, I always want to give you guys exactly what you want to hear. So, as always, I throw this out here. I beg you, plead you, implore you. If there is something that you'd like me to do on this podcast, whether it be a segment idea, whether it be just a question that you'd like answered when it comes to college basketball, betting base, what have you, list goes on and on. Just fire that in one of two ways. Either my Twitter timeline at JRSquirty1, that's why I call it the Twitter mailbag. As always, if you send those via direct message, well, letters EM to me mean does not matter, or you're able to send in an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, for one, you actually do an absolutely superb job of being able to help spread the word of Hooping with Hoops. People see on Apple Podcasts, oh, hey, this got a bunch of reviews, and apparently this Greg Peterson guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to college basketball. It allows more people to be able to view it. It brings in more new listeners, so I always appreciate you guys doing that. And then when you send in that review, you're able to leave a comment, a question, beef, what have you, and I'm more than happy to address that on the podcast. Did not get any of those today, but we are going to be having an absolutely superb chat with our good buddy Eli Becker of HeatCheck CBB on the other side. Then the final segment, taking a look back at all the news and notes of college basketball the last few days, and that's coming up right here on the podcast.
Greg is going to the bench and bringing in a sharpshooter from the Overtime Network Hotline.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Hooping with Hoops. Myself, Greg Hoops Peterson. It is great to have on our next guest as this man founded a network that is doing an absolutely terrific job with their college basketball coverage. That'd be HeatCheck CBB. As you guys know, we've had quite a few of these guys on this podcast, and it's because they all deliver. This is someone that he's got some great ties out there with the Mountain West and just West Coast college basketball in general, as he's based out there in the city of Seattle, Washington, as it is Eli Becker joining me on the podcast. You're able to follow him on Twitter at Becker_Eli, and I will spell Becker for you, BOETTGER. Eli, great to have you back aboard of this podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
And I'm sure that we appreciate knowing a little bit more as to why everyone wound up transferring from Wichita State. I don't think anyone appreciates what necessarily wound up going down with Greg Marshall, though. I mean, we've seen the reports from both The Athletic and Stadium over the past 48 to 72 hours. Apparently, there was punching of students. There were racial and ethnic slurs. And apparently, according to The Athletic, Greg Marshall was just getting absolutely ballistic at someone over a parking lot spot. I have no idea why. I mean, it's a parking lot spot. That's a story for another day, because I know that there are people out there listening to this podcast probably like, yeah, I've gotten mad over a parking lot spot. I'm one of those people that I'll just take the extra walk, burn a couple extra calories. But with that said, certainly not looking good for Greg Marshall as we get a little bit more serious with this. I mean, what are your initial thoughts when it comes to this? Because I think now it makes all the sense in the world as to why we saw one of the highest transfer rates out there in college basketball with Wichita State this offseason. A lot of people were speculating that it might be for him to leave to a Power 5 job, but looks like it's anything but that.
It's just a really tough situation all around, and it's unfortunate to see stories like these, because you know In these types of instances, it's always young people who are being impacted in very different ways. You have former players and current players as well who will defend Greg Marshall, which always seems to happen during instances where a coach maybe is involved in an allegation like this. And you also have several players who speak out and share their experiences. And it's sad because I think for a lot of us college basketball fans and just people who love the game, we look at someone like Greg Marshall purely from a basketball perspective as someone who built up a mid-major program into one of the most respected programs in college basketball. And of course, a lot of that has to do with the financial side of Wichita-based Koch brothers, who of course have been huge donors to the university and are in large part a reason why Greg Marshall is one of the highest paid coaches in college basketball, despite coaching a Wichita State team, which doesn't necessarily get the same attention as a Duke or a Kentucky, but it does provide some meaning to what we saw this offseason. And I know most of these reports are stemming from, I believe, 2016, which is obviously a very different roster. But we have seen many instances where Greg Marshall has displayed some anger, some pretty irrational decisions on the sideline. The first one that comes to mind for me is when he was just extremely livid. I can't tell you what year it was, but when he was scrimmaging, his team was scrimmaging against a Canadian team, and that kind of set the tone, I think, for a lot of people. When it comes down to it, I'm curious how this all plays out, because we know too well in college sports that the one thing that kind of cures all of these things, whether you agree with it or not, personally, I don't agree with it, but if you can win games, you can bring money to a university, chances are you have a much better chance of staying in your position than if you aren't. So I'm curious how it all unfolds. For what up to me, I think Greg Marshall, at the very least, should be suspended and probably removed from his position. But just knowing his support in that area and that region of the country, I'll be curious to see how that all winds out.
I do agree with you. There certainly have been a couple guys that have come to Greg Marshall's defense as well. But we also do know that on the sidelines, Marshall is one of the most fiery guys that you're going to find in college basketball. We know that Wichita State has claimed the moniker of play angry as well. This is certainly not the way that you want to be going about it. I think that I'm putting that as politely as possible, as we do have Eli Becker joining me on the podcast. And that certainly is a massive situation to watch out for, because if you wind up seeing a coaching change with Wichita State, got to think that it's really going to sink this program for not just the upcoming college basketball season, but moving forward. And when it comes to college basketball for this upcoming season, it feels like you don't have a college basketball program unless if you've wound up watching your own multi-team event. I think that it's very fascinating. Now, the one that is being set up with Kansas State and Colorado, I think, is the most intriguing. They are going to be playing in one. They've done a great job of alluring in some great talent. And then you've got the one with Duke, where you've got Elon Bellarmine along with Howard. That's a little bit of a lesser tier one. And what I'm really noticing with these multi-team events is that it just seems like it's all or nothing. We're noticing the one that I pointed out with Kansas State and Colorado, that you've got a whole lot of talent there. Meanwhile, you've got Ole Miss setting it up with, I believe, Jackson State, Arkansas State, and Central Arkansas. And it really feels like these Power 5 conference teams, they are either going all or nothing with their non-conference schedules, with really not a lot in between when it comes to the strength of it.
No, it's been a really crazy few days for a lot of these scheduling and MTEs for the upcoming season. And I'm definitely happy to see a lot of these events coming into place, because as recent as about a week ago, we did see many of these previously scheduled MTEs, for the most part, completely fall apart. We've had some canceled events, some that are pushed back to 2021, and several power conference teams that are backing out of their previously scheduled MTEs. And it's fascinating to see what the different programs are doing. The very first one that comes to mind that I tip my hat to is Gonzaga, with what Mark Few has decided to do. Gonzaga could very well enter the season as the preseason number one team. And instead of shying away from competition, they're just going after everyone. They're planning on playing Baylor in Indianapolis. They also have a game scheduled against Iowa, which will be in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They'll probably also have a game against Michigan State and Tennessee. So right off the bat, you have four top 25 caliber teams on that Gonzaga schedule. And it's especially important for these teams that are outside of the power conferences to get quality matchups. And I'll also mention Boise State, which will open the season against Kansas. That's another team that's probably right in that fringe bubble conversation. You look at those teams that are in that top 40, top 50 range that aren't necessarily out of, say, the Big East or the Big Ten or ACC, those early games where they could potentially trip up a team that's still trying to, you know, figure their way out. I think that's especially important. So if we do see one of these teams like a Boise State or maybe a Northern Iowa, which is going to be playing in Nebraska against some quality opponents, I think it really sets the table for putting a team in that at-large conversation.
And I think that college basketball would be all the better for it, being able to see a couple more of these at-large teams be able to shine, because I've been mentioning it on this podcast time and time again. I really think that veteran experience along with senior leadership out there in the backcourt is going to be very critical. Bringing back AJ Green for a team like Northern Iowa, I think, is going to be big. I mean, I certainly don't think that UNC Asheville is going to be contending for an at-large bid or anything like that, but they bring back a bunch of pieces. If they wind up being able to get their shot against a quality opponent, because we know that now the Maui Invitational is going to be held in Asheville. Unfortunately, they're not going to be invited to it, unlike Chaminade, who always plays in the regular Maui Invitational out there on the island. But with that said, if you're able to give these mid-major teams some opportunities, I really do think that they could be able to shine. We saw more upsets really than ever before during the 2019-20 non-conference slate. I think that we could see that perhaps even on steroids as compared to last season, just given how everything has been shaking out with the pandemic, because all these teams are now on pretty equal footing when it comes to practice time, at the very least when it comes to your own region, because we know that the guidelines out there in the SEC part of the country, a little bit different than that where you're based in Seattle, where I'm based out here in Las Vegas, Nevada, what have you. But when it comes to these geographical rivalries, I really do think that it's going to be a golden opportunity for these mid-major teams to be able to pick up some critical wins.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially one of the things that you mentioned here is with a program, for example, like Duke, or I mean, Kentucky is a perfect example of a team that even with John Calipari and with his ability to have essentially a new roster every season, that's going to be the case and then some this year. He loses pretty much all of his contributors from last year. And I know he's bringing in several five stars, a lot of great players who will contribute immediately. But even then, that's a lot of turnover. And when you're dealing with just 17, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, it's going to take some time for that to come together, which is why I think when you put, say, a team like Richmond, which is going to have five senior starters, when they're going to play against a team like Kentucky right off the bat, I think you have to provide the edge to Richmond there. And for the Spiders, which could very well be a team a lot like Dayton was this past season, if they have an opportunity to take down a team that is still trying to figure things out, I think that really bodes well for a team like Richmond going forward. And especially in the Atlantic 10, where you have a conference that is going to feature a ton of really good junior and senior players, really experienced backcourts. I think if those teams can make a dent right at the start of the season while some other teams are figuring things out, I think that provides a really nice pathway for getting multiple bids out of some of those mid-major leagues.
And I am so glad that you brought up the Atlantic 10, as we do have Eli Becker joining me on the podcast. I actually did my Atlantic 10 preview of this podcast a little bit under a week ago. I would say it's about 4 or 5 days ago. And as I take a look at the Atlantic 10 right now, and I don't think that they're going to get this many bids into the NCAA tournament, but I could see perhaps like five teams being in contention for an at-large bid. I mean, even though Dayton loses Obi Toppin, they're going to have Jalen Crutcher coming back. They've got a couple guys that I think are going to be interesting mixers and shakers, including a guy in Chase Johnson that I believe wound up beginning his career at Florida. If he's able to be fully healthy, that's big. You mentioned Richmond. I think that this is a team with top 20 potential. I think that they can make the second week of the NCAA tournament. They're that good. Rhode Island, they wound up going 4-for-4 on their transfers. St. Louis is the only team in the country that brings back two guys that wound up giving the team 10-plus rebounds per game. Duquesne and George Mason are two teams that wind up bringing back pretty much all their starters. Now, George Mason, they wound up being 5-13 in conference. I don't think that there's any way humanly possible in which they're going to be able to do enough to warrant at-large consideration. But you just take a look at this conference, I think that there are a whole bunch of teams here that if they're just able to pick up that one or two signature wins onto their resume, if they're able to get those opportunities, and then the Atlantic 10 sort of plays out how you want to see it, where these teams like Rhode Island, like Dayton, they're able to pile up the wins, and then who you expect to be the tomato cans like Fordham, George Washington, what have you, they wind up being exactly that. You could see the Atlantic 10 really being able to rise up and sort of have a year like they had quite a few years ago, in which they did wind up getting those four bids.
Bring up a number of really good points there. And there are so many teams out of this conference that I really like, especially for, as you mentioned, having that experience, already having proven guys on campus. I think you have at least four or five teams at the very least that can reasonably contend for an at-large bid. And then when you combine the fact that we'll now have these condensed schedules where most of these teams are going to have really good opportunities against teams out of those power conference leagues to start the year, it really sets the table for maybe the Atlantic 10 getting right around four or five bids. And we know just how crazy that conference tournament is year in and year out. It seems almost every season there's a bid stealer that comes out of that league. So I have my eye on them. And I always reiterate with a team that comes out of, say, the Atlantic 10 or the Mountain West, what have you, that those early opportunities are just so important. And I think we especially saw that this past season, although we didn't have a selection show or the NCAA tournament, when you see what Dayton did and what San Diego State did, a lot of the reasons why they had respect heading into what would have been Selection Sunday is because they were able to pick up quality wins in November and December. And that's what it's always going to boil down to for a lot of these mid-major leagues, whether they like it or not. And I think it goes back to our previous points in discussing that if you have an opportunity the very first day of the season or right after Thanksgiving to get a quality win, you're able to pick that up. It really provides a great pathway for getting into the NCAA tournament this year.
And I do think it's all about opportunities, because we think to Dayton, what was even more impressive to most people than the fact that they wound up running the table out there in the Atlantic 10 regular season was the fact that they went toe-to-toe with Kansas in that game out there in Maui. That's what came to mind for pretty much everyone, and that's why they were getting so much hype. So great point there, as we do have Eli Becker joining me on the podcast. And before I go any further, I have to give a little bit of shout out to Oshun Oshinie. With him on the floor, St. Bonaventure was 18-6 last year without him, 1-6. So if he winds up being fully healthy, there's another team that might be contending for an at-large bid. But just taking a look at college basketball in general, we're about a month and a half away from the start of the season. You could say that's a little bit less than that. I think it might be, as you're listening to this, 43 or 44 days. But who's really counting at this point? We all just want college basketball. But is there a little bit of an underrated storyline that we need to be paying attention to right now that could really have a big impact when it comes to college basketball season? Because obviously, we're talking about these multi-team events. We found out about a week or so ago that you do have to play in a multi-team event to be able to reach a maximum of, I believe, 27 games that you're allowed to play this season. There was some clamoring that maybe you take away the multi-team event moniker to be able to get to that max. That wound up getting shot down. But is there anything else that you're really watching for?
I brought up just recently on my Twitter, and I think some other people are going to start discussing this as well. With a lot of these leagues now releasing their conference schedules, I'm curious to see how these various leagues go about it. We have seen with the Conference USA, for example, is proposing for teams to play at the same team twice in a week to, again, kind of prevent a possible spread of COVID-19 and just ensure as many games are played as possible. Out in our neck of the woods in the Mountain West, they released their schedule this week. 18-game league slate, nothing out of the ordinary. But one of the things that I had come to mind, which I think could really provide some benefit to these leagues, is as we've seen with the NFL and MLB, we don't have a bubble situation, which once the MTEs are all finished, that's most likely going to be the case. I think it is wise for leagues to try to at least assemble a bit of a window, maybe even a bye week towards the end of their conference slate. If there is an instance where teams have to make up postponed games, because if you take a look, again, if we want to go back to the Atlantic 10, if you have a team, say, like Dayton, which is, again, competing for an NCAA tournament spot, they have a big game coming up against Richmond, which could provide a quality win, and that game is postponed and eventually not able to be made up. I mean, that really shifts the balance in that conference, and that could make the difference in a team receiving an at-large bid or not. So I don't know how many leagues will follow suit and choose to do that, but I think it's especially wise for some of these conference commissioners to really take a look in the mirror and understand that we're heading into the colder months. We don't really know what's going to happen with COVID-19. It's something that changes by the hour and by the day, and erring on the side of caution in terms of possible postponed games or flexible scheduling changes, I think that's really going to benefit the leagues that choose to go that route.
And I really love what the Metro Atlantic Conference did with regards to their conference schedule as well, to your point, in that they pretty much set up a bye week at the end of the year just dedicated to COVID makeups. I mean, worst thing that winds up happening is that you give these guys a week off going into the conference tournament. If you wind up needing it, you wind up needing it. I mean, obviously, we all hope that nobody gets infected by COVID-19 or, for that matter, any virus in general. But I mean, it is one of these things in which in 2020, unfortunate things have been happening. So I really do applaud the Metro Atlantic for having that foresight. And I always applaud the man that is on this podcast right now, Eli Becker, and all the work that he does. Eli, you are doing an absolutely terrific job with HeatCheck CBB. I know you guys are preparing some of your college basketball conference previews. The HeatCheck CBB simulation has been a lot of fun for my bracket bus and Bucknell Bison. Even though we have yet to make the NCAA tournament, that will be turning around. We are preaching defense. We are playing the pack line defense, even though we might not have the players to do so. I do not care. We will somehow, someway find a way into the top 25, as you have done with your great college basketball coverage. So let the good people at home know where they're able to follow you on social media and just what you're all working on in general.
I appreciate that plug. You can find our stuff, as always, at heatcheckcbb.com. We'll be rolling out a ton of season preview content over the next few weeks or so, and really excited to get into the wave of things and get this college basketball season started soon. So we're really excited to get going.
And it is always great to see people doing tremendous work when it comes to previewing the college basketball season. HeatCheck CBB and Eli Becker certainly fit the bill. So big thanks, Eli, for joining me right here on Hoopa with Hoops. Coming up next, it is that time that I give you a little bit of a roundup as to everything we've seen from a news and notes standpoint from college basketball from Friday and Saturday. Here in lovely Las Vegas for Hoopin' with Hoops, myself, Greg Hoops Peterson. Big thanks to Eli Becker of HeatCheck CBB for joining me in the last segment. And now it is that time of the podcast. I give you a little bit of a roundup as to all the news and notes that we've seen from college basketball over the last 48 hours, as per usual. This is the last 48 hours instead of the last 24, because yesterday I did a conference preview. That would be the Big East, and I'm doing one for every single conference. We are now down to the Power 5 plus the American Athletic Conference. So if you like that, you're going to be able to get some great content there, and along with that, doing a deep dive on all those teams. So that is going to be a lot of fun, and something that myself and Eli talked about is just the way that some of these conference schedules are changing. According to John Rothstein, on Saturday it was decided that the Big Sky is going to be playing 20 league games with each team facing each other twice. There is a little bit of rumor as to whether or not they're going to be playing each other at the same venue twice. This is something that we've seen thrown out there by Conference USA, the Ryzen League, America East, pretty much all these mid-major leagues that have quite a bit of travel. They are looking at this right now. The American Athletic Conference, they are also looking at a 20-game league schedule as well. We've been noticing a little bit more of that. When it comes to more multi-team events, BYU is now confirmed as the fourth team at the Legends Classic that is going to be taking place out there in Mohican Sun. So going to be a little bit of travel for a couple of these teams, as that is out there in the northeastern part of the country, and it's going to involve UConn, USC, Vanderbilt, along with BYU. So that is going to be an absolutely terrific field. And according to John Ross' team, when it comes to UConn as well, more news about them. Tyler Pauly, who was dealing with a knee injury, is cleared for live action. This according to Dan Hurley. He averaged right around 9.5 points, was able to give the team some good rebounds. As you guys know, my projector finish for the Big East yesterday, I wound up putting UConn at number 3. I think that they're poised for a very big year. Having Tommy Pauly back in the fold, along with guys like Akuka-Cook, from a team that was number 1 in the country in the percentage of shots that they blocked on defense, that is going to be absolutely massive. So we're certainly on the lookout there. There is another multi-team event that's going to be going down in Orlando. It looks like it is going to be Tennessee, Charlotte, Penn State, and VCU that is going to be playing a multi-team event out there. That is going to be great. I know that Eli applauded the non-conference slate of Gonzaga for the upcoming season. It seems like they're going to be playing a multi-team event out there in Orlando. They're going to be joining Houston, Auburn, and Texas Tech. And it looks like Auburn and Houston are going to be playing Gonzaga, so that is going to be absolutely superb. Seton Hall is also going to be challenging themselves in the non-conference slate. Looks like they're going to be playing against UCLA, the winner of Boise State versus Kansas, which we were talking about, Baylor. They're going to be on the road against Rhode Island, and then they're going to be playing Rutgers and Penn State at a to-be-determined location. So that is going to be another one of these big bombers, along with the Kansas versus Boise State game that is going to be in the Orlando bubble, the multi-team event that is going to be going down there. A lot of these multi-team events, I just call them multi-team events because, well, there are some without names right now. It is just a whole lot of chaos, but it is going to cause for some very interesting matchups, that is to say the least. So I am very happy to see that. And when it comes to some of the player news that we are seeing, we saw quite a few waivers go through over the last 48 hours as well. Luke Frampton, who is transferring from Davidson to Western Kentucky, he's going to be eligible immediately. With Frampton during the 2018-19 season, he was a very good cog for a solid Davidson team, wound up shooting 37.5% from three-point range, averaged a little bit over 10 points and 3 rebounds per game, along with nearly a steal per contest. This is someone that stands right around 6'5". He is a native of the state of West Virginia. During the 2019-20 season, had his season cut short by 5 games, but he did shoot 48.5% from three-point range in those games, so he certainly should be very good for a Western Kentucky team that I think has the ability to just completely run roughshod out there in Conference USA. I don't think that Drake is going to run completely roughshod out there in the Missouri Valley Conference, but I think that they're going to be a solid player. And now they're going to have Darnell Brody available immediately. This is someone that's 6'9", 265 pounds, only played 3 games during the 2019-20 season, just was buried on the Seton Hall bench, but he should give this team a little bit of punch. As we know, this is a team that wound up losing Liam Robbins due to transfer. That was absolutely debilitating to that program because he was averaging right around 2.5 blocks per game. He was able to do a very solid job for that team. And speaking of someone that I think is going to be able to do a very solid job, I did my conference preview of the Atlantic 10 a couple days ago, as we were talking about with our good buddy Eli Becker. Do not sleep on the Bonnies of St. Bonaventure, as they're going to have Anthony Roberts available immediately. This is someone that 6'4" during the 2019-20 season, gave the team just under 13 points, 2.5 assists, 3 rebounds, and shot 36.5% from 3-point range, with Oshun Oshunie, who's going to be available for pretty much the entire season after, as I mentioned, the team was 18-6 when he was out there on the floor and 1-6 when he was off of it. That's going to be begging for Roberts. 13-plus points in each out of his last 4 games, with Kent State at least 3 assists and 3 rebounds in every one of those games as well. This is a guy that's going to be able to impact this team. I think that St. Bonaventure going to be a force to be reckoned with. Grand Canyon is going to hope to be a force to be reckoned with. They have overhauled things a little bit, and they're going to have Sean Miller Moore available immediately. This is a team that they're going to be looking to do some good things under Bryce Drew. With Miller Moore, he was one of the few role players for Oregon State. Oregon State is a team that did not necessarily dive deep into their bench. He wound up seeing 29 games, but he played sparingly with right around 9 minutes per contest. He was able to give the team right around 3 points, 2 rebounds per game as a JUCO transfer. He is from the country of Canada. Just wound up not necessarily seeing a lot of consistent playing time for the team at Grand Canyon. With his 6'5 skill set and his ability to be able to find good shots, as he shot nearly 68% from the floor in the couple shots that he did wind up taking, it should certainly help him carve out a nice role there. And then we saw a little bit of a late add to the transfer portal, as DJ McDonald, someone who wound up seeing quite a bit of playing time for UC Riverside during the 2018-19 season, during the 2019-20 season, actually saw a little bit of a dip in his minutes, but was actually a nice role player for a team that was one of the best out there in college basketball, being able to slow the game down. Shot 36.5% from 3-point range, gave the team 4 points, and shot 87% at the free throw line as a little bit of a reserve guard during the 2019-20 season. He has decided that he's going to be entering into the transfer portal. I've been saying it on this podcast quite a bit. These guys are entering late. I do think that there might be a little bit of value on these schools trying to be able to bring them in, because as we know, there's probably going to be some guys that wind up opting out of the season. We just have seen it with every sport. What the NCAA does with them, whether they're going to be eligible immediately or not, that is something that I'm going to be keeping my eye on. And I'm trying to keep my eyes on a little bit of everything when it comes to college basketball news and notes for you guys. So if you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Hoopin' with Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And if you ever have any question for the podcast, feel free to either fire that into my Twitter timeline at @JarredScordy1. Once again, letters DM to me does not matter. Or you could send in an Apple Podcast review, rate this podcast 5 stars to help it get a little bit more exposure, and you're able to send in your question, comment, concern there. Eli Becker of HeatCheckCBB also does absolutely terrific work, and he joined me on the podcast today. So big thanks to him, and hopefully you're all safe, healthy, and doing well. I'll talk to you guys once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.